This media has been presented to you by the Maryland Men of Faith, where men are challenged and encouraged to form the character of Christ. For more information, please visit mmof.org.
All right, well, let's get started here. My name is Brent Harding. We're going to be talking this afternoon about digital evangelism and social media. And so when you have questions, do you go to a friend? Do you go to the library? Or do you search online? Or something else? Google it? Yeah. Yeah. So many people are Googling things. And even this, Google has become a verb to some extent. And most companies don't like it to become a verb because it's hard to protect their copyright for their name. But each day, millions and millions of people go online to look for answers to their questions. Some questions that they look for answers for are as simple as, how do you change the oil? I have a couple here from a list of the top questions out of Google from 2020, I think. I know for myself, every time I change the oil in my truck, I have to pull up a YouTube video that I have bookmarked that tells me how to reset the little light on there. I read the book, it doesn't make any sense. I look at the video, it reminds me I can get it done. Songs to sing while washing your hands. That was a big one last year. How to stop climate change, and the mask emoji or the hug emoji. Both of those were in the top last year, for some reason.
So what was the song to sing when you were singing?
You'll have to go Google it. I think there are actually quite a few different ones.
Okay.
My daughter sings her ABCs.
Oh.
So, but I think you can also sing Jesus Loves Me to go with it. So, we have seen an incredible growth in technology over the last few years. This is going back to the 1400s with the printing press and 1950s here with the man on the moon, and it has just continued to accelerate at a faster and faster pace. So much is happening when it comes to technology that it is mind-boggling to really keep up with it. We've gone from the 1950s with this little beast here that was one of the early hard drives. This held a grand total of 5 megabytes of space. So most of our smartphones, a single image, a high quality image out of a smartphone, would not even fit on this device. And 550 pounds right there. And today most of us have something like this in our pockets. The other day, my daughter lost hers when we were getting on the plane. She couldn't find it. It was in a different pocket in her backpack. It was fine. But they've gotten so small that we don't know where they are. And connection is almost ubiquitous. It's always strange to go into a place where there's no internet connection, like right here. It's also very nice to not have a cell phone connection. 2 years ago, I was in Tibet. That's Mount Everest there in the background. And we had stayed the night up under the clouds and a little closer where I could see the mountain right out my window all night. And at 16,000 feet, it's rather hard to sleep at that altitude when you just come in from much lower. So I was up quite often and got to see it a lot, which was the perk. But on that entire trip, for 7 days driving through Tibet, with the exception of being in a tunnel, I had a 5G cell phone connection the whole time. In the middle of nowhere. And this actually was, as we watched the sunset, I FaceTimed my dad, who was not able to be on the trip with me, and got to show him sunrise on Everest, it was sunset, sundown, evening. It's about 12 hours, roughly, more or less, from here to there. So connections are ubiquitous. These little devices that we have everywhere, we can pick up the phone and we can look up information. In fact, I rarely use my phone as a phone. Most of the time, it's some kind of texting or searching or some kind of other thing. We also have these little ubiquitous devices, the smart speakers. This has actually been a complete revolution in the way that search happens, because no longer are search engines actually looking for specific keywords, but they're looking more for the intent of what you're looking for, not that you've typed the keyword combination correct. So we get better search results as a result. But it also changes the way that that the web really works, because you're looking for a vocal answer, because it will read you back an answer, rather than just being able to read through or skim through a screen and see that. And with the advent of the smartphone, 2007 is when the iPhone came out. Technology in phones have continued to advance. They're putting more and more sensors into these things. And they're even putting sensors in before they know what they're going to do with them. Many of the iPhone versions, they just kind of, and actually even with more recent, they have, I think it's LiDAR, that is in some of the newer iPhones. Androids also have some other sensors like that, where they don't have a good solid answer. There's no like good use case of here's the best thing that you can do with this. They might have some trite little thing that you can do and play around with, but as technology advances, as the software advances, they add more and more and more functionality into those. In fact, my watch here can not only tell me the time, which is helpful, but it counts my steps, it checks my heart rate, I can read my text messages off of this, and so this technology is becoming more and more prevalent. Hardware is obviously important, but even more so as part of this revolution is the software. Because they can take these sensors and they can take these devices and continue to write more and more things into them. And with the software, we get social media, which is what we're here to look at. In the early days, advanced software was spreadsheets and word processors, which, if I was doing spreadsheets by hand, I would be much more excited about using Excel than I am today. But now we've go to these globally connected technologies, where we have Google Docs and we have Facebook and we have all of these other incredible things. So this is a map of the internet. Each of these little points on here is a device, or a server, or potentially even a more connected, and you see some of these things that have thousands and thousands of points coming into them, or little lines. So that's a connection between one and another device. I don't know the exact accuracy of this. I kind of tend to think that we're looking at a very zoomed out view, and if you keep going in, there's going to be more and more points. But regardless of that, there are millions and millions of devices online. And actually, billions would probably be the correct term to use. Because as we get into the social media side of things, we'll start to see how that is even more true. Technology, if we want to use that term loosely, has started as a broadcast medium. So from the printing press, it was one person could write something out. I mean, I guess we could go further back and say just writing on papyrus. But one person writes something out, it gets printed, and it gets distributed to a lot of people. Radio, of course, was broadcast. Television is broadcast. Those are terms that we equate to radio and television very easily. And that is... It's a great way of getting a message out to a lot of people that are going to hear that. But with the advent of social media and the web, really, we've turned more from a broadcast to what can be called a narrowcast, or a conversational approach. So I can write something, or I can produce something that is very narrowly focused at somebody, and I can respond. They can respond to me, and we can have even more of a real-time conversation. And it's really important, I think, when it comes to evangelism and to what we as a church do online, to keep that in mind, because so often we think, okay, we'll build a website, we'll record a series of videos, and we'll put it up online, and it's done, right? We've modernized, and we're good to go. But we don't take the time to actually have that conversation, to define and refine what we're doing and our approach to people into a one-on-one or one-to-a-few, you know, type of level. When you look at the advertising platforms that we have now, and those are things like Google, YouTube, which is one and the same, and Facebook, you can, and there are other platforms as well, but you can very specifically, very narrowly target an ad to just a few hundred people globally that is exactly what they need to hear, because it's targeted based on their interests and their expressed interest and what the platforms know they are interested in. Let's take a little bit of a look here at the social media landscape. I assume that everyone here uses social media. So you might have heard of this one. Anyone not have a Facebook account? Very good. I want to not have a Facebook account. Anyone heard of TikTok? Sino Weibo?
No.
This is like a Chinese equivalent to Twitter. I think these are all kind of really big social networks. Obviously, this one is not targeted for our demographic. Periscope?
No.
This is a live video platform that Twitter, I think they bought it, but I don't know if they might have started it. I'm a little hazy on that one. Not super popular. Telegram? It's a messaging app, not the original Telegram from quite a few years ago. But it's more like WhatsApp or iMessage or that kind of thing. iMessage? Texting can really go in with the iMessage. Reddit? A few people. Anyone know what YouTube is? Yeah. Who doesn't? Instagram, kind of more of a visual social network that Facebook acquired. Email, few of us still use it. There's a few, the generations coming up really don't use it that much, which I find very strange because I do so much in email. Twitter, short messages, pictures, videos, LinkedIn, kind of the professional social network, Pinterest, Clubhouse. Anyone heard of this one? This is a voice only. Obviously, there's a little bit of an interface to navigate through it, but we could have this conversation that we're having right now using Clubhouse. There's no just ignore the slides, and then we could just have a conversation. So there's actually no visuals to it. You can't share your screen. You can see who's in the room. And if I want to talk to one of you, I could promote you, or I don't remember what the term is, but basically bring you in and allow you to start speaking if you want to. So you can have. I played with it. I don't know. It was a couple months ago. I haven't used it very much, but you could have rooms with 10 people in there and rooms with several thousand people in there, just having a conversation. WhatsApp. Again, back to kind of our texting messaging platform. So we've kind of mixed some of these, but really they are social networks, even though they're somewhat they come across in a little different way. So Facebook is the largest social network in the world, 2.9 billion monthly active users. So if Facebook was a country, and I realize the analogy doesn't go super well because Facebook has people from every country, or just about, but if Facebook was a country in and of itself, it would be the largest country in the world. China comes in at like 1.5 or 9 billion. So Facebook takes the cake on that fake comparison there. 35% of the monthly users will log into the platform every day. 60% of the world's internet users are on Facebook, and 36% of the world's total population uses Facebook. So obviously they feel like they still have room to grow. And Facebook makes billions and billions and billions of dollars, not from charging their users for accounts, but for using all of our information to sell as a marketing platform. So all the ads that we get in between there that are targeted probably very specifically, very narrowly to our interests and the things that we have clicked on and looked at and watched. And they're making very good money. If you actually take one of the most disconcerting, I kind of live a bipolar side of this because it's as from a communication and marketing standpoint, it's really awesome what you can do. And then the personal side of me says, wow, this just freaks me out. Sometimes I talk to my wife about some of these things and she's just like, nope, I don't want to use Facebook. But if you look at some of their marketing tools, you can so narrowly define people within this radius of where they are that are interested in these kind of things, and you can get down to a super narrow niche audience. Very incredible what you can do with it. Second largest network is YouTube. 2 billion monthly active users, about 43% of the world's internet users, 16.5 minutes a day on average that people watch on YouTube. So let's keep that number. We've got a couple other kind of video apps and timing-based numbers. I don't have all the same stats for all the networks that we're going to look at, but 1 billion hours of content is streamed every day, and 500 hours of content is uploaded every day. And it's not all viewed by humans, or reviewed. WhatsApp, number three, also owned by Facebook. 2 billion users, 100 billion messages sent every day, and 38 minutes a day are spent in the app. So obviously some people having a lot of conversations back and forth in the app. Of course, WhatsApp, you can do video conferencing, and if you call it that, and audio calls as well. Jumping down a little bit to TikTok, we have 1.29 billion monthly active users, 100 billion messages sent per day, and 50.6 minutes per day in the app on the average user. Have any of you used TikTok? I have not, I will confess. But they have, kind of their secret sauce is their algorithm. And if I'm sitting there looking through my feed in TikTok, it's going to be different than the person sitting next to me, than their feed. We may see the same video at one point, but what comes next for me is going to be completely different from the next person, because they're looking at all the metadata about that video, plus the contents of the video, plus how long you watched into the video, and they're taking all of that into account and deciding what the next video that they're going to feed you. Of course, if you like the video, if you comment on the video, if you dislike the video, all of that plays into this. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, all of these play with these same YouTube, the same kind of algorithms. You can actually take a YouTube account that someone's been watching, and you can learn actually way too much about somebody by looking at their homepage when they're logged into YouTube, because you can see what they've been watching, or the same similar videos to what they've been watching. Pinterest, number 14, a mere 459 million monthly active users, 240 billion saved pins, 35% of U.S. residents have accounts. Obviously, there's more global numbers, but kind of trying to focus this down here to what's closer to home for us. Twitter is the number 16 in this list. 353 million users and 6 minutes a day on average in the app. So they don't have kind of the time in app that a lot of the others, and they're actually like, to some people consider it kind of the failing social network, because they keep struggling to be profitable and to keep people, retain people into the app. So that's kind of just a broad look at some of the social networks out there. But we know that a lot of people use the web. And the web is broader than just social network. But I think it's important that we understand kind of what people are looking for on the web. And in the privacy of their homes, in their car, in their rooms, every day, millions and millions of people are turning to the internet to get answers to their questions. And we looked at some of the simple things, or the little more trite things at the beginning, but I want to just kind of dive into a few searches or common searches, and we have some numbers that go with them. So this is the search volume number. So there'll be a phrase and then a number. And the number, if you look at it from a marketing standpoint, any search that is higher than 1,000 1,000 searches per month is considered a viable market for marketing, for search engine marketing. And these are North America. So people are searching for things like understanding the Bible or how to understand the Bible. So 3,600 or 1,600 per month are doing those searches. How to pray to God. Who is God?
All monthly.
Monthly, yeah. Is God real? Ten Commandments? And obviously we don't know what exactly they're looking for in these kind of things, but...
Is this worldwide or...
I believe this is North America, okay. But I'm not positive on that. This is... most of these searches are from another presentation I've done that is a little older, so... Adventist? 200,000 a month? Ellen White? And if we kind of broaden the scope out here a little bit and take a look at people in crisis, so what kind of things are they searching for? Why do bad things happen to good people? Does God allow suffering? What happens after death? Life after death? 12 steps? Victim support? Suicidal thoughts? Abuse? Death? Cancer? Divorce? Anxiety? And other related searches, depression, God, please help me. And looking through some of these is just a reminder of, like, this is where what people are looking for when no one's looking. This is what people are looking for when they trust, they don't have someone trustworthy to ask. So millions of times you know, people are doing these kind of searches, and sorry about that. I will not move my laptop. Let's hope it connects this time. Let's see, what did we do? Nope. There we go. All right. How many times have you scrolled through social media, not looking for anything in particular, and then you see a post that inspires you or a message from a friend that gives you a bit of joy? There are so many people that is what they're looking for. And digital evangelism is something that allows us to bring that bit of joy and bring that bit of hope to people that are searching in the midst of social media or more broadly on the internet. Digital, obviously, is things related to computer technology, and evangelism is the zealous advocacy of a cause. I was actually probably in college when I realized that an evangelist is something other than just a Christian trying to bring someone to Christ. There are technology evangelists within companies. There are other ways of using the word, but in this context, this is what we're looking at, is the winning or revival of personal commitments to Christ. So digital evangelism, simply stated, is advocating for the cause of Jesus using digital means. So we could stop there, but it probably won't answer all the questions that we have. So let's take a look at why, again, this is even more important. As Christians, we're called to glorify God. We are called to be witnesses for what He has done in our lives personally. And He has many ways of reaching people, but He has chosen to give you and I the honor of being able to do that. And digital evangelism is just an extension of personal face-to-face evangelism. And in reality, as we'll talk about here, it's kind of the first step now in a lot of evangelism. So 82% of people in the U.S. have social media accounts. So huge numbers, huge percentages of people are using these platforms. And God tells us that here, this was from Jesus saying that I replied, I tell you, if even they, which was the children, keep quiet, the stones will cry out. And we, again, are called to witness and to use these tools. This quote is, I'm sure you've all read this before, but it's always worth rereading to me. Christ's method alone will give true success in reaching the people. The Savior mingled with men as one who desired their good. He showed His sympathy for them, and He ministered to their needs, and He won their confidence. And then He bade them to follow Me. So this is what we are called to do, to mingle with men. And social media is the digital virtual version of mingling with men. This model that we're going to look at is taken from a book that was published recently by North American Division. And I'll have a link at the end of this, but it was written by Jamie Dom, who it's called Digital Evangelism and Discipleship, I think, or maybe I got the, and maybe it's Digital Discipleship and Evangelism. But she proposes in here a model for how this should work. So she talks about four different areas that are needed for creating content or for social media. So the first one is the content creators, the next one we have distributors, and then finally you have the engagers. So as we look at these three different pieces of this, the creators are people who are able to package the gospel and the teachings of Jesus in a digital-friendly format. So this could be blog posts, writers, images and graphics, videos, podcasts, basically any way that you can kind of pull something together in a way that is attractive for people and that kind of meets their interests in a user-friendly way. Distributors are people who now take those packaged materials, whether this is an individual or an organization, and build a network and spread that out there. So this is kind of the digital door knocking that we had in traditional means in the physical world. And then the last one is the engagers. And so these would be empathetic individuals who are going out there and finding ways to engage. They're listening to people. They're commenting. They're liking. They're reaching out to people in ways that that is attractive. And I mean that in, like, just bringing people to them and befriending them. you can take these three areas, and it can either happen as a single person. So you, me, we can create the content, we can build our own platforms as our own little ministry. And when I say build a platform, I don't mean copy Facebook. I mean build a network within existing platforms. I have had many people since I've been at the General Conference and even before that, who say we need to have our own Adventist version of Facebook or Adventist version of whatever. And God calls us to be the salt and light, and we don't put all the salt in the salt jar. We need to be out there where people are. Even though there is a lot of evil and a lot of bad things on the internet, I think we still are called to be a part of the world, or be in the world but not of the world. And as part of the Adventist Church, as part of a larger denomination, we are also part of an ecosystem of doing this. So there we have ministries as part of the church that create video, ministries that are creating podcasts, ministries that are doing amazing things online. And this is a source of content for us. So as individual digital evangelists, we can take that content and we can build our network and start to share that out there and go and like on these things and reshare these things ourselves. 1 Peter, Peter talks about each of us should use whatever gifts that you have received to serve others as faithful stewards of God's guidance, of God's grace in its various forms. So God is encouraging us to go out there and use the gifts that we have. So let's take another look here at these three individual pieces. And as we do that, let's keep in mind that of the millennial generation, 2 in 10 millennials attend church on a regular basis. So only 2 in 10. And only 20% of Americans regularly attend church. So that's kind of the backdrop to the digital mission field that we're looking at. People are literally every day Googling for God. This was a screen capture that I got just yesterday or a couple days ago. If you go to Google, you start typing, you get these search suggestions. These are common searches that people are looking for. So does God forgive all sins? Does God love everyone? Does God love me? Does God have a sense of humor? Does God change his mind? Does he forgive adultery? Does he have a name? Does God forgive all sins? Murders, adultery, repeated sins, deliberate sins? This is what the world around us has questions about. And what are we doing to provide answers to be there in, you know, this is search. You can do the same thing in Facebook. You can start typing some of these kind of searches within and see what things are out there. As we start creating content, we need to keep in mind the marketer's rule of seven. And that says that a prospect needs to hear the advertiser's message at least 7 times before they'll take action. So that means that we don't have to have completely unique content all the time. We can repeat things. We can say things over, maybe twist it, or twisted is not the right word, but say it in a little different way. And spin it, yeah? Just repeat it. Different platforms mean you can share the same thing, but maybe you need to twist it a little differently or present it a little differently. And then keep in mind kind of the 80-20 content rule. 20% of your content, especially in marketing, is your call to action. This is the buy now, here's the button. the sign up now, the go to this page event or action. The rest of the 80% is what? What do we share as a church? What do we share as an organization? So sharing practical content, things that people can use so they know, oh, hey, I got this from the Adventist church. It helps help them become accustomed or acquainted to who we are, become familiar with who we are and what we do. You can share your initiatives from your ministry and how it connects to the community. You can update your audience about your goals. You can engage and connect with your followers. But most of all, tell your story. Tell your personal story or tell your organization's story and how that fits into the community. So, yes?
I'm sorry. I may have missed it, but did you explain what the 80 and the 20?
Yeah. So the 80% would be these kind of things. So just broadly interesting things that explain the organization somewhat, share our values, but is interesting to the end user and valuable to them. The 20% is the call to action. So that's the come to the meetings that we have, sign up here for this email, sign up for an event. That's the kind of the balance that you want to strike. Seth Godin is a popular marketing guru, and he says that who will your audience change as a result of your article, post, letter, video, whatever it is that you're creating? Who will it change? And the other way we can ask that question is we can say, how will it change their perception of God? What can we do to change their perception of God based on what we are sharing? So the distributors are digital door knockers. These are things as a distributor, forwarding emails, liking and commenting on things. You know, go and find your church's Facebook page. Like that. Take and reshare. If you appreciated a sermon, reshare that. Put that onto your timeline. Those are things that are incredibly valuable. If any of you listen to podcasts, I know occasionally I'll listen and they'll be like, make sure to go and rate the podcast because that helps us show up higher in the rankings. The same thing goes with your church's content, with your own content that you're creating. So going out and sharing that in other ways is important. Finding other networks. Any of you know Nextdoor? Are you familiar with the Nextdoor social networking? Sometimes I go on there and just read things to laugh because it's very petty occasionally. But it's basically a community social network. If I have an address, when I sign up, I put my address in, and I'm put into a community that is like literally my next door neighbors. And you know, that's a place that you can use to reach people. People share more than I share. I can tell you, and it's good to see what people are interested in, and that's another way to engage people. And that comes down to the last section here is the engagers. So these are people that are empathetic. They're on the lookout for people's cries for help. Those come out in different ways, depending on who they are. But you know, as I read through my friend's feed, I get a feeling for the kind of things that they share. And sometimes those things just go completely off. And people they're not going to say, please help me, I'm depressed, but they may say that in another way. So be on the lookout for those, and this is something that you do prayerfully, because this is a time where you're actually going out and making a connection. And something that is really good to do, be able to do, is pray for people or pray with them. And you may not be able to call them on the phone, but almost every messaging app allows you to record an audio prayer and send it to them. And they may save that. And that may be something that is helpful for them to go back and listen to when they're struggling. And then the last thing is to follow up, follow up, follow up. Don't just pray about it and forget about it. Pray about it, write it down, and come back a week later and reach out and see how they're doing. In all of this, engagement is the point. Like, we're not creating content to create content. we're creating things so that we can reach out and we can find people who are looking for help. If you've been involved with marketing, you've probably heard of marketing funnels, where kind of the broad end of things is like, I'm looking to buy a car. And that's just kind of where I'm at in this scope, and I might be looking for a car, I might be looking for a truck, I might be looking for something. And you start to narrow down. And this, you know, the bottom end of the funnel is where the salespeople really like to have you, because that's when you're ready to sign the check and make the purchase. Brands have many different touch points, different ways. If I'm interested in a Ford, I might see it on the road, I might go to a dealership, I might look up something online. And I think as a church, we have similar kind of things. As Christians, we have similar things. I don't know what your journey is. I know what my journey is. But each of us have come to where we are today from a different place, and we're all in different places right now. And it doesn't always fit into a straight down funnel. And in this book, again, Jamie proposes what is called a journey map. So these are used not just here, but this is basically explains the modern seeker's journey. So seeing or awareness, thinking about, consideration. So someone's thinking about going to church, but they're not going to actually go to church. They're thinking about God, but they're not quite ready to take that step yet. Doing, the engagement, caring, and that's more comes on the relationship level, and then staying, becoming a member, becoming involved. But with each of these, it's not a linear thing. It's something that you might go into the thinking, and you go into a loop of discovering and researching and looking things up, and then you might jump off, and you, when you come back, you're going into a different area. And everyone kind of comes at this from a little different perspective. So it's important to kind of keep these varying ways that people come into contact with the church in mind. When you're ready to start going, it's really important to choose and choose a good target. If we try and reach everyone all the time, we reach no one. And many times in my work, we've come to projects and we say, okay, so who are we trying to reach? And they say, everyone, of course. And that's going to get us just about nowhere, because there's no possible way that you can reach everyone with a single campaign. And this comes back to the narrow, being able to narrowly focus what we're doing, like Facebook and some of these advertising things. So in order, one of the steps to define who this is to kind of create a persona. And these can take many different shapes. I have some personas on my wall for a project that we did, and I've got, I think there's 5 different personas that represent 5 different people that would be involved with this project, and that this would kind of touch into their lives. So taking age, gender, interests into account, basically we're trying to build a profile of who these people are. And put a picture with it. Give them a name so that when you're in your, if it's at your church, you can, as you're planning what you're going to do, you can say, now when we think about Mary, how does this affect her? How are we going to reach John based on these criteria? And start to define who these people are so that you know when you're thinking about an event or you're thinking about a social media campaign that you want to do, you know exactly who it is that you're trying to reach. Once we've kind of gone through that, now we talk about where do we reach them. And that's where we start looking at what platforms there are. It's helpful to understand. I mean, obviously Facebook is a good place. We get billions of people. But if you're looking for Gen Z, they're not there. If you're looking, you better go to TikTok. And if you take your content, your recorded church service, let's say, and try and put that on TikTok, that's not going anywhere. that might be better for YouTube, but it might not even be the best thing to use as an outreach tool. Maybe you need to think about recording something more specifically for YouTube or for TikTok. We've all seen YouTube videos. I'm not going to play this whole thing here, but this is one, Justin Koh. He is a Seventh-day Adventist. He's the gentleman on the left. He was a Bible worker who felt called by God to start a YouTube ministry. And over the last 4 years, he's been focusing exclusively on reaching people online with YouTube. And he's kind of changed his show a little bit as he's gone. But this particular episode, he's talking with his barber on the right, who was, when he started going to see him, he was a pagan. And in this video he talks about he wouldn't consider himself a pagan, but now that he's on the other side of this, he says, yeah, that's basically what I was. And this is a 30 minute show. Slow might not be the right term, but it's just kind of an even pace. It is not like a long program per se. There are longer things, but that's kind of right in the sweet spot for what YouTube is. Now, if you go look at TikTok, this is Justin's channel on TikTok. This is the other side of things. So this is a 1 minute video, and we'll just play this here.
It will unlock the entire Bible for you. If you're wanting to understand the Bible better for yourself, there's really only one secret that you need to know. And the secret is not in watching more internet videos. The secret is not in studying commentaries or listening to sermons or reading books. The secret is in the Spirit. Jesus said that the Helper, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father sends in my name, he will teach you all things and bring to remembrance all that I've said to you. In other words, Jesus' promise to you and I is that he would literally give us a teacher, a tutor, to help us understand the Scriptures. A verse that changed my life is 1 John 2:27. But the anointing that you received from him remains in you, and you have no need that anyone should teach you. You don't need teachers, you don't need pastors, you don't even need this online ministry. The good news is that he wants to teach you personally. So slow down and let the Spirit reveal to you Jesus. Follow for more of that good.
And that's it. And he's got a whole channel with hundreds, maybe thousands of followers with much shorter content. It's completely different from what he has on YouTube. And it's targeted to two probably completely different audiences. Although there is crossover, but people go to YouTube for one thing, they go to TikTok for another thing. Instagram actually has more and more this type of content, and they've said recently that they are moving away from being a image platform to being a video platform. Because they've seen TikTok grow, and this is Facebook. They don't want to see the competition growing like that, so they're taking and moving their platform into where people are more interested in going. So understanding the platforms, understanding obviously your audience, but then understanding the different platforms is a good thing to keep in mind as you begin reaching people or begin these digital evangelism projects. I think it was yesterday morning I was listening to a podcast while I was out running, and they were talking about Moses. And during his second 40-year span as he was in the wilderness with the sheep. And it talks in Exodus. Exodus 3, verses 2 and 3 says, "There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. And Moses saw that through the bush, though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight and why the bush does not burn up." And it kind of got me thinking that this is a lot like social media in a way. We are there's a few of us here in the room, we all may be posting on social media, and there are thousands and thousands of posts going by. We have the opportunity to let God use us to be that bush, to be that bright light in the darkness that is the world around us, and that is in the digital world. So we need to obviously approach this very carefully with prayer. We want God to be a part of us and guiding what we're doing on social media. But as we do that, it's good to remember that lives actually are being affected. So over the last 2 years at the General Conference in Communication, we have been actively working to reach people through advertising on Facebook directly, specifically asking people if we can pray for them. And we have spent quite a bit of time, a good bit of money, investing in creating ads and running ads to try and find effective ways to do this. And for probably about a year and a half, we don't have quite as many now, but we had a team in the Philippines who were praying for these people every day. They were responding to these people, to people who were requesting ads or requesting prayer through these ads. And we were getting, I think, probably over the course of a couple months, 1 million+ messages coming in from people requesting prayer. And this gentleman came through one of these ads. I apologize, the pictures aren't particularly great. He's an offshore oil worker, gas worker, and in May of this year, he was baptized. We, you know, pray with these people, pray for these people. It's not just saying, oh, we'll pray with you, sending a recorded prayer and being done. This team was praying for them every single day. And we had people around the clock praying for these people. This is Rogerio Lopez and his daughter. You can see her there in the background. They were baptized in July of this year. Again, Facebook. They came onto Facebook. They got connected with a digital ministry within Brazil. And here they were several months later being baptized. This lady was connected with a local church in Montreal, was baptized this summer in July. Virginia came to the church's Facebook page, started following the content, asking questions. Someone said, I'll pray for you. They reached out to her specifically and sent her prayers. And the conversation evolved. She joined an online Bible study. I think it was a Zoom Bible study that we have going with this team, and was eventually connected in Netherlands to a local church there, and this past March was baptized. Masindi from Uganda, again, similar story. These are real people that started online and were connected to a local congregation in their country close to them. These two were a live-in Christian and Buddhist couple. He was a former Adventist, but lived as a Christian. But they were living together in Bhutan, and she was Buddhist. They somehow got connected on social media with the Adventist Church, followed through to Bible studies, and they decided that they were going to get married and get baptized on the same day. And I don't know their names, but this is where it really comes together, is when you see the things that you can do online and see the end result when how God uses those posts and these things that we're able to do when we take the talents that we have. God can do amazing things in reaching individuals. So I just have a couple slides here of some additional resources. The Gulf States Conference, their communications director, put together a 12-video series on digital evangelism. So he kind of, in each of the videos, he goes into different tools, different things that could be helpful. So I thought I'd share that one with you. And then the next one that I have here is this book that I mentioned earlier, Digital Discipleship and Evangelism by Jamie Dom. The link there, the URL, is to AdventSource, where you can get the book. There's an ebook available as well. And she's got a lot of really great resources in there, and a lot of I really appreciated the philosophy behind it. Kind of digging into not only why it's important, but some various aspects of digital evangelism, more than we had time to even go into here. So that would be another really good resource to look to. And that's the end of my presentation here. Does anyone have any additional questions? Yeah.
Just off the break, say your church has about how large do you think your like a church's team should be?
It depends on your reach. It depends on the talent what talents you have available. I think it's good to, you obviously have to start somewhere, and as you begin to build that, you may find that you need to expand even more, and bring in more people. As we talked about earlier here, that, you know, the model of the creator and the distributor and the engager, that can start as one. That can start as 20. It's something that can be flexible and grow up as you go. And it depends, again, on how many platforms you want to reach. One of the things that we've been doing in you know, at my work, is we're kind of pulling back and reassessing how we approach our various social media platforms. Facebook is not Instagram, is not Twitter, is not, and it can go on. And sometimes too often we put the same content in all the places, and we expect it to perform really well in all the places. And it doesn't, because maybe it works really good on Instagram, but it's going to flop on Facebook. And so one of the things we're doing is looking to find somebody that would, let's say, own the Twitter account, and that would own the Instagram. They're kind of the ones that are leading the charge. They're the ones that log into the account on a regular basis, multiple times a day, and are liking and replying to people and responding as the church, in this case. If it's a local church, it's the same thing. They're logging into your local church account, and they're responding. And obviously, these are people you have to trust, and you have to make sure that they're doing it, they're responding as you would want them to. But, you know, it really depends on how big you get.
Do you know of any, is the conference, maybe general conference or so, do they offer any resources for, any financial resources for expansion that you may know about to expand it?
I'm not aware of anything right now. That might be something that you could reach out to the conference from an evangelism funds kind of thing. My guess is that would be more in the lines of like advertising and promoting versus like a funded position. I know that there are a few around North America, there are a few churches that have either like an associate or a Bible worker type person that is doing digital evangelism. So those are a couple thoughts on that. So anyone else? Juan?
How much money is involved for targeting a specific demographic in favor? Because I don't think the problem is you creating content. Everybody wants to say something about Christ, right? What God has done for them in their life and share. But how do you put that out there for people to know and to speak to see besides, you know, some of your friends making it or resharing? What does that involve? How much financially? Because you do have to invest.
You do. And for a long time, you didn't have to, and Facebook decided that they wanted to make money for some reason, and they began to limit and reduce the number, the amount of reach that you get without paying. Especially as a corporate or as a page versus an individual. So as an individual, I can share something. It's going to get more reach than my local church sharing something. Even though my local church might have, let's say, a Facebook page with 10,000 people that have liked it, and I have, whatever it is, 1,000 people on my friends list, Facebook is going to only show that content to roughly like 15 to 20% of the people from the page, if you don't pay. It's the incentive. They want you to shell out the money. And we found other things where in the growth of the number of followers, there are some benchmarks where you can grow organically right up till in this instance, we were up to about 500,000 likes. And we couldn't quite get over until we invested a little bit in a campaign. And then it bumped up over 500,000. And now we're pushing right up to 1 million, and then they want a little bit to bump over. So it's a business. You have to kind of take that into account as to how much. The worst answer is it depends, but it really does. It depends on how targeted you make that. You know, we've found some of these ads for prayer where we were paying in the, initially in the dollar range. Per impression, that's not sustainable. Or not per impression. I mean, I'm sorry. Per like click engagement per prayer request. So, in working with the tools, Facebook has a I'm trying to think of what they call this, but within their ad platform, you have the ability to upload like 50 different images and 100 different headlines. Or calls, like taglines, basically. And it will take and mix and match all of those together to find the most high-performant ad that it can make out of the content you put together. Obviously, it's not changing the message, but it is taking the headline and the call to action, and so you basically fill out a spreadsheet kind of thing where you put in all of these different variables. And it will take and mix those together and try and find the most performant way of reaching your audience that you're looking for. And we've been able to get those down into the 10-cent range for making contacts. So if you take into account their tools, you have to, for me, swallow hard and recognize that you're in their playground. And use the tools that they provide in the way that they ask you to use them, basically. And you can get things down into a reasonable range. If you're trying to connect them off to, say, your church's, a contact form on your church's website, that's going to cost more than if you're trying to get them to fill out a lead generation form on Facebook itself, because they obviously are invested in keeping you on the platform. But they also make these tools available. So, we've used their lead generation tools before to get thousands and thousands of contacts that we then export out of there and take them into something else. So you can get it down into the pennies per contact. But again, it depends on your demographic. It's easier for me to find to make ads that are pennies per contact in Africa or Inter-America than it is in, say, Washington, D.C., just because of the cost of living in those areas are, it's a different demographic. And if I'm advertising for people in New York, I'm competing in that same ad market against Nike and Apple and these other New York Times, these people that have organizations that have a lot of money to spend on advertising. So you have to kind of find the right way, find what that demographic is, narrowly bring that down into something that really fits within a target market and a target location to where you are. So, and we found also, you know, Facebook, if they're trying to optimize something for spend, you may get a lot of likes because you paid, and what do they call it? Boosting a post? Absolutely worst investment of money. Because they're going to find 1,000 people to show it to, but they might be on the other side of the world. And have no interest, yeah. Have no possibility that they might even, you know, come to your event, let's say. But you need to, you know, create a market, create a demographic, and refine that down to, I'm looking for people in the DMV area that are, you know, that are men that are in this age demographic. Then you're going to get more closer to what you're looking for. You may not be able to do a boost, and again, boost is not the best way to spend your money. You need to go to more of a legit ad, basically, and you're going to get a better performance out of that, and much more, you know, specific to what you're looking for. So,
what's the difference between a view, between reach, and between engagement?
Depends on the platform, because nobody likes to use the same metrics because they want to be unique and special. You know, views would be basically in a, like, analytics or like web analytics. That would be somebody saw the page, they came to your website, they saw the page. A user would be one person. So if I go to the Tridelphia Church website, I'm one person. I go to the home page. I've seen one page, and then I click to another page, and I click to another page. That's three views, one unique user. On the Facebook instance, that would be scrolling past something. That was a view. They saw it. It went through their feed. Pardon?
Time-based as well. Because I see, like, if you're scrolling down and it plays a video, but then you skip it again, what's that considered?
That's a play.
That's a play.
That's a play. Now, when you look at on Facebook, they'll tell you the 3-second play time versus the 10-second versus the 100% through the thing. Those are going to be a dropping number. Because of these autoplays, I keep forgetting that there's autoplays because I've gone and turned it off in my Facebook personally in my settings because I get annoyed by the videos just automatically playing. But yeah, that would be a play. So again, that's, you know, in, I think Instagram calls them views on a video.
Yeah.
Is a view. They don't give you the like stats. They give you a view stat, and that's again those autoplays. That's a view. Engagement would be liking it, commenting on it, sharing it, or privately sending it. Basically, you're interacting with that piece of content. That could be if it's an ad type content where you're clicking on the button. That's an interaction. So that would probably, I would guess, that would fall within engagement. Yes. 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 Yeah. Engagement is definitely higher than just kind of a whoop, it went by, and depending on the platform, it varies on how they count some of those things, but some of them will even track if you are lingering on something. So I'm scrolling through and I look, I see an ad or I see something and I linger over it, they say, ah, they're interested in that, and they've now marked that against my profile and say, oh, he's interested in that. And even though I didn't like it, I didn't click it, I didn't touch the actual thing.
But you slowed down.
I slowed down. Yeah. Yeah. And it's, yeah, it's crazy. So. All right. Well, thank you guys for coming.
We hope this presentation from the Maryland Men of Faith has been a blessing to you. Your feedback is welcomed. Please visit us at mmof.org.